Hello, citizens. Maddie here with a quick note before we get started. We are trying to plan a No Gods, No Mayors live show in London, England, not Kentucky, and we need some listener feedback to help us plan for the right size of venue. We'd really appreciate it if you would head over to nogodsnomayors.com and take the listener poll you set up there. There's no purchase or subscription necessary. Thanks so much. All right, here's me and the girls.
We're all sad because the Dilbert guy died.
Yeah.
Because all of us were socialized at too young of an age because our dads worked in offices and got the Dilbert principle because they thought it was kind of funny. And we all read it because we wanted to be like our dads.
I read the comic obsessively as a child because I was like, this is because my dad worked at the business factory. And I was like, well, this will be me one day. I'll work at the business factory like all men.
Playing the video game.
Oh, Dilbert desktop games.
Yeah.
I was never super into Dilbert because his tie, I always thought that was too wacky for me.
Vulgar. Yeah.
A little too silly.
It was offensive.
For my taste. I prefer Doonesbury, if you will.
A lot of people don't know this, but his tie is depicted like that because he died in battle.
As did Scott Adams in battle with the hated libs.
I love how do I love everything about Scott Adams? Absolutely not.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, I do.
You have to be careful because you can get fired for making jokes about Scott Adams getting killed.
Yeah,
you're fired from my podcast because killed. I'm...
there's this new, all the Turning Point people have set up, no, the Dilbert Superfan Syndicate has set up a website called scottskillers.com. Fragrance of Betar that still exists is going after me for joking around about Scott Adams.
Scott's killers. They had to buy the website from the people who wrote a fan page about Braveheart. It's called Scott's Killers.
Scott Adams' ex-wife doing like stage tours with Pyro.
You mean his ex-wife and assistant up until his death?
Yeah.
I had such a long, protracted battle with the man because I used to claim that I was the creator of Dilbert and I would draw Dilbert strips, and he did get really mad at me and block me. But I looked after he died, and he has in the interregnum unblocked me, which means we could have reconciled. Oh, wow. And now I'm so sad about it.
Deathbed banquet of forgiveness.
Oh my God. That was probably his last thought.
He accepted Christ into his heart and he accepted you. He named you as the successor.
But the catch is you have to spend one night in his creepy house that looks like Dilbert. You have to survive one night.
In his backroom style office that he has.
That's in a big Dilbert head with the hair as the parapets.
Yeah.
A detail I've never forgotten and never will forget. It'll be the last thing I see on my deathbed is all the clouds will part and I'll see the Dilbert castle.
With Scott Adams, Dilbert is now your kind of psychopomp, right? When you die, you're going to be seeing the Dil.
It's the hero fan, but he's got Dilbert's head. All right. Should we introduce the show?
Oh, it's No Gods, No Mayors.
No Gods, No Mayors.
There's never been a god here, never been a mayor here, and there never was. It's Riley.
We have a guest.
I'm the mayor again, and our guest today, it's Hesse Denny from various podcasts, including one new one.
A brand new podcast.
Are they allowed to do that?
Well, we don't have to talk about that. No, I'm kidding.
We so have to talk about it. That's because, hey, you know what? If you were like, I sure do like it when Riley researches the thing and then talks about it. I sure wish there was another way to hear that, but maybe with, I don't know, Hesse, Dan Beckner, Charles from E1. Congratulations. There's a way to do that now. You can listen to us.
I have an exact thought. Yeah.
Yeah. You can listen to us. We've
brought it into fruition, and it's about scams and cons and scammers and con men.
Yes.
Flim flam.
Flim flams, grifts, and grafts. Basically,
a little bit of humbug, as our old friend P.T. Barnum would say, past guest of this show. Yeah.
Dan and I used to do a podcast called Bottleman about Canadian politics, and Dan recently is entering into a part of his life, not that you'd know it from how the schedule has gone recently, where he is able to podcast more regularly. And he called and was like, hey, do you want to do Bottleman again? And I was like, I want to podcast with you again, but I don't want to touch the news. So,
what and also you can't call it that anymore because you transitioned in the Interregnum.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
As we all know. Well, I mean, not publicly, but we're kind of announcing it here, right? I think.
Yeah, I just love the way that anytime you're pitching anything, Riley, you begin with a hey. It's like a solemn kind of Canadian convocation. It's like, yeah. So I'm just saying that, hey.
Hey.
What if you listen to my podcast?
Hey.
Hey.
It's going to be, it's fun. We've got a couple episodes out already about a Canadian ostrich farm that turned into a kind of national either scandal or shame or madness. And we haven't, it's worth listening to. And then we're going to have a few more coming soon. So you can listen to more of Hesse and I there.
For a fun teaser for listeners of this one, we've got the next one up is The Assassination of Kim Jong-nam, which was one of my pet stories.
Prank gone wrong. Social experiment.
The greatest prank video of all time filmed.
Well, that's your episode title. Yeah.
Jackass could never. Anyway, we're going to be talking about a mayor from Buffalo today. Another Buffalo mayor.
The town that killed Big Bill McKinley?
Yeah, the very same town.
The very same.
That's exactly what I was going to say. But first, we have a little segment that we like to do where we've actually started getting the name right this year.
We have.
It's called Municipal Roundup.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes a year.
You got to get into it.
To get the name right.
For a very long time, I would get it correct every time we did it. And these two chuckle fucks could not remember the name of it. But it is called Municipal Roundup.
I remembered the name. I was getting it wrong on purpose to agree with
you. Hey. You know what? I think it took me 20 years to get my name right.
Ha-cha-cha-cha. Item. I have an item.
I have an item
for the class. So we talked.
Items for the class.
So we thought we were done with him, but he is not done with us. Eric Adams, the sort of paterfamilias of this podcast, late of this parish, no longer the mayor. We talked about this last time that his future was like battling anti-Semitism through cryptocurrency.
Yeah, that lasted what, like 35 minutes?
It lasted 35 minutes. He launched New York.
It took Eric Adams only 35 minutes to defeat anti-Semitism forever. You're welcome, New York City.
He launched his meme coin, NYC token, and within 30 minutes, rug pulled it, making off with about $2.5 million.
Incredible.
I mean, that's got to be iconic. Just an elaborate money transferring scheme money laundering.
you might suggest that, but there must be someone who in good faith invested their life savings in Eric Adams's meme coin.
I mean, they only had 30 minutes to do it, so they must have been pretty quick.
They were watching this space.
He did what they currently still has Hawk Tua in the fucking FBI witness protection program. But right before he did the rug pull, he did go on Fox Business and say that he was going to the Congo and Dubai to look at some of the great things we've done here in the city and how do we implement them in other countries. So that's
rats
what he's been up to.
So Dubai,
who knows
rats
where the money's
are.
Going? We were talking about this in the No Gods No Mayors chat. It's so funny that he could have so easily plugged himself directly like an avatar with his sex tail into like the MAGA tree and been rich forever. But instead, he is doing the third act of Tar to himself.
Yeah, he chose to do something weirder. He chose to get photographed with a kind of bewildered local official for the rest of his life.
Well, it's because there is only one true believer in Eric Adams, and it's Eric Adams. Like, he genuinely...
I think it's fair to say that he has a voyager's soul, right? The reason why Istanbul was always the first step is because he needs to travel. He's not... You can't contain Eric Adams.
Changing the saying from Istanbul is always the first stop to Istanbul is always the first step is like what his the commercial for Eric Adams would say.
Istanbul is always the first step towards having a kind of like a globe-trotting, like world-bestriding, colossal business empire.
It's the gateway to the East.
That's
right.
You know what? Absolutely.
He's making the same realization a bunch of like Venetian fail sons made back in the day.
We're still working on that. Don't worry.
Istanbul isn't just, you know, sort of an outward change. It's an inward change.
It's just. It's not just not Constantinople.
Sorry. Yeah. Exactly.
Why did Constantinople get the works? It's Eric Adams knows, and he will tell us all soon.
Did we also see him getting in a fight on a sky bridge? on a jet bridge, whatever it's called. He was like in the airport and he was confronted. He was assailed. He was embattled.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And and he said, go fuck yourself. I'm not the mayor anymore. Which I think is really encapsulates the system of ethics that this podcast strives to achieve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I think that Eric Adams would declare himself mayor of the jet bridge. Just be like, this jet bridge has swag.
I'm actually the mayor of, I'm the mayor of anywhere I go because yeah. I was the mayor of the greatest city in the world.
He did threaten to fight that woman. Yeah. And he said the Brooklyn, she was going to see the like Brooklyn in him, by which he meant that he was going to fight her.
Yeah. I'm going to give you the old Fort Lee, New Jersey. Yeah.
Yeah. On his way to Istanbul. So he it's
gonna,
a process.
Okay.
He was going to become a bisexual and grow a mullet.
You're going to see the Brooklyn in me and he's just got gauges now.
Yeah, and he goes, hey man, I'm going to take you to the fucking Windjammer if you don't calm down.
We're going to Trans-Picos in 5 seconds.
You want to show him? I'm going to show you nowadays in a moment.
I do want to say one thing,
yeah,
which is I don't think Eric Adams has the technical ability to perform a rug pull himself, much like I don't think Hawk Tua had the technical ability to do a rug pull herself.
Hawk in the mainframe, right? Like,
I don't think either of the...
Hawk in the mainframe?
I don't think that... I think there are two rug pulls where I am pretty sure the person doing the rug pull was like either too stupid or odd to know exactly what it is they were doing.
To be anything more than a figurehead, he was the mayor of the rug pull. There is no system of power in which he is capable of being anything other than mayor.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
He was born to May.
Yeah, it's like the sort of thing, like you've got like the, like there are certain receptors in your brain for opioids. All of us have a receptor in our bodies for Eric Adams to be the mayor of us.
This is what
Tiffany Henyard tells people as well.
I have another item. I have one more item.
Before we move on, I do want to bring up the thing I said that you guys all laughed at and thought was a joke. I did look it up.
Okay.
And it is true. I just watched the video after Dubai, Eric Adams met with a gynecological plastic surgeon and announced that he was going to, quote, look into stem cell and report back on the full body experience he was about to receive.
He talks like Trump. Trump would look into stem cell, and that's exactly how he would say
I'm looking very strongly into stem cell.
Eric Adams is going to leak the adrenochrome files by accident.
It's so crazy. What could that possibly mean? I truly don't even have a speculation on what a full body stem cell experience could be.
They goop you up with the stem cells. You know, he's going to be in a big tank full of them.
Someone showed him Jupiter Ascending and they're like, we're just going to do this to you. You're going to step into the glowing goop and you're going to step out and you're going to look younger.
Eric Adams himself getting scammed and being in like a warm tub of Ultraglide in like the back of a mall in Dubai.
Hey, this isn't a real gynecologist. What the hell?
I feel way smoother now. So
Eric, bees recognize morality.
Yeah.
You know what they say.
He's in like the possibly scam interdimensional transporter from the last season of The Leftovers. And he's just sort of like in goo, completely nude, being jostled in the back of a truck.
Wait, the movie with Paul Giamatti?
No one else saw The Leftovers, huh? That's fine.
No, The Holdovers. Damn it.
God, come on, man.
Take that out. Take that out, Sam. I've embarrassed myself.
Leave it in. Double it. Okay. Item. I have one more item.
I'm the item chief today.
I'm the item sheriff. So this was sent in by a couple of people, including some listeners and friends of the show. So I cannot give credit to one person, but we got a New York Post headline here. Skeleton washed ashore on Washington Beach identified his former Oregon mayor who disappeared 20 years ago. So this is in.
And then the crystal method starts playing.
Welcome to the Boney Island Whitefish. No.
Oh, you would hate to be washed ashore. There are a very small set of circumstances in which being washed ashore is the better option.
Yeah. So this is a skeleton they found in 2006. And they finally identified it as former mayor of Fossil, Oregon, Edwin Ed Asher.
Come on.
He was wearing a sash.
Yeah. They were like, what mayor is this? When it washed up, it had the sash and the top hat on.
he was wearing a chain of office. Yeah.
Bones, take these bones to dead mayor storage.
He also disappeared crabbing. And they're just like, well, who could this body have been?
I'm on unidentified awareness.fandom.com, the Wikipedia for unidentified people. And Ed Asher, this individual was recently confirmed to have been identified, and the article on unidentifiedawareness.fandom.com is just, you know, he was a man whose remains were found in a beach in Tola, Washington.
They kick you off of there if they identify you. It's like that Facebook group where people have never broken you. A bone. Like, it's, yeah.
Clothing and accessories. White athletic sock.
Oh. And it's a mare on it. Stitched into the sock.
The socks you only get if you're mayor.
They call it the active sash.
Yeah, he was wearing the kind of basketball shoes they only give to mayors.
Mayor Force One.
Mayor Force One. Thank you so much. I had thought of that and I was waiting for someone else to say it. Thank you all for getting me.
We need to make shoes.
Oh my God.
We have to make the Mayor Force Ones, unfortunately.
That just hastily spray painted secondhand Geo baskets and we're asking $2,000 for a pair of them.
Honestly, okay, wait, hold on. Sorry. An Air Force One with a sash painted on it that said Mayor would be really good.
If you are a shoe artist, get in touch.
Yeah, there's got to be one.
How many shoe artists listen to the show, do we think? 500, 1,000?
Oh, thousands.
My younger brother actually goes to FIT where he's studying leather making, like leather working and specifically to make shoes.
Okay.
So I think maybe I could get him to...
Yeah, can you give me his home address and I'll just go over there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Getting in on the ground floor of like a sort of generational run, like the first Rick Owen shoe ever made, and it was for a mayor themed comedy podcast.
Air, but it's mayor instead. The movie.
It's like, listen, you don't understand. This is my fucking retirement account. I keep these in like soft bags in the closet because one day they're going to be worth like $50 billion.
Mm-hmm. How to Make It in America season 3 finally drops. Yeah. It's just about the fucking Mayor Force Ones.
I'm going to wait for Eric Adams to make enough money from rug pulls to be able to pay me $50 million for these shoes.
Which he will.
He certainly will. I mean, there's that
thing about being covered in lube is you get into a shoe very easily.
You can get into any size shoe.
Loafers are size too small. Cover your entire body in water-based lubricant.
God, I hate when I go shoe shopping and I have to strip into completely naked and get rubbed down with lube by the shoe shop attendant.
Dr. Brannick hates this one weird trick.
Ugh, so annoying.
I can't believe I remembered his name. Oh, that's pretty good.
Also, I just want to say, if you have a wiki of unidentified like bodies, you can't put it on fandom.com. You got to put it somewhere
else. You can help by expanding it.
Yeah, what's the opposite of fandom?
Eric Adams trying to put on the Air Force Ones, but he's too lubed up and the laces are slipping through his fingers.
And he just says something like, gotta spend money to make money, while he continues to work at them. Cigar and single malt scotch, let's go. Tie him up.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't tie. Shoes you don't tie.
Why'd you go? I want to know why Eric Adams sounds like John Travolta.
You miss 100% of the shoes you don't tie.
It's so true, Eric.
Lesson one, Istanbul is always the first step. What's the second step? You miss 100% of the shoes you don't tie.
Istanbul is always the first step because I keep slipping because my shoes are covered in loose.
These are the presets of our new fashion brand. It's called Rick Adams.
Oh, man. Anyways, it's pretty funny that it was Fossil Organ, don't you think, everyone?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Okay.
Pretty good.
Those are my items. We should probably move on to the next.
Thank you so much for the items, Maddie. Yeah.
Fossil Organ, they probably should have just named it what's that gland called? That pineal gland.
There it is.
Pineal gland, Washington. Yeah. Isn't that where Twin Peaks is set? I'm so annoyed with myself that the one word I actually nailed the voice training on was a really elegiac. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great cowgirl. Look, here's the thing. We're going to talk about Jimmy Griffin right now. All right.
Okay.
Jimmy Griffin, mayor of Buffalo.
Mm-hmm. Hess's where they made the native... Wild Wings?
Yes. Hess's native
the town
Buffalo.
That killed Big Bill McKinley.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yes. So,
on the steps of the craziest looking building of all time. And which have you ever? It's like we don't have to go into it. Sorry.
I thought they killed Big Bill McKinley at the pavilion of the fucking Tower
the
of
the Pavilion
Abundance,
of Lights.
But the Pavilion of Lights at the Garden of Lilies at the Great Pan American Exposition in Buffalo. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've all seen the musical.
Riley, have you seen the musical?
I have not. I've never. I don't really see.
Oh,
go to
Riley,
musical.
You gotta watch Assassin. He's good.
He was killed in Tartaria because he looked around and he was like, "Wait, what the hell are these built?" And then they had to take him out.
So, James Arthur Griffin was the American.
Big Bill McKinley was like the Charlie Kirk of his day. Like the kids were saying, like a big billionly.
Yeah, there was a player pianos had written a song called "We Are Big Bill McKinley." And
sorry, that really got me. All right, fine. James Arthur Griffin was an American singer, guitarist, and songwriter, best known for his work with the 1970s soft rock band Bread. Sorry, wrong Jimmy Griffin.
Good.
So, sorry. Thank you for letting me do that.
It's good. Yeah, no, I was doing that because I definitely wasn't thinking about how I would pronounce big billionly more often.
So,
good joke, Riley. Let's all give him a...
Thank you. Oh, him. You he-himmed me, huh? When I do a bad joke, I get the he-him.
Well, yeah.
Were you offended? I'm
that's
sorry.
That's your punishment.
Yeah.
Hey, Riley, you know what's crazy, baby girl, is that you noticed that I he-himmed you.
There was almost a tinge of disappointment in your voice.
Yeah. Hessa, if you want to carry this bit over into your new podcast with Riley.
Oh, I would love to. It would be the butt of every joke right now.
I'm calling his boss at his day job and getting him to do it there as well. It's just spreading across different lanes.
We're planning a live show, hopefully. I told him I'm going to put my last estradiol pill that I have from a couple of years ago, and I'm going to put it down his throat like a cat and hold his mouth shut on stage.
Honestly, you just have to like drop it in some like some peanut butter or something.
It's like, why does this wrapped up ham taste like estrogen?
Oh, don't worry. So look, Jimmy Griffin, this is a quote I got from reading his obituary because he is dead. You don't have to be a genius to be a mayor.
That's true.
That's true.
I think we've established anything doing this.
This show has really, really established that fact, I think.
And he was Buffalo's non-genius mayor for four consecutive terms from 1977 to 1993.
Mm. Oh, lifelong mayor.
Yes, this is a big mayor. We, you know, in Buffalo, we really have like, I don't think we've ever had a good mayor, really. they've all been pretty fucked and weird. Byron Brown, another classic.
We did a Byron Brown episode. That's our only Buffalo mayor we've covered. Yeah.
So James Jimmy Griffin was born and grew up in Buffalo's old First Ward. It's a city with wards. Which is a heavily Irish neighborhood.
Actually, honestly, that's like the only ward, I'm pretty sure.
Only ward? It's got one ward, the first ward, and that's the end of the wards.
The old ward districts.
Yeah, they gave up and they're like, let's just name everything else normal. I'm just sick of it.
First, who knows what comes after that? Let's just call stuff after landmarks.
You don't have to be able to count above one to be a mayor.
It's true.
Not in Buffalo.
He was born 4 months out before the onset of the Great Depression. He went to elementary school, yes, but he was in and out. He hauled potatoes, kegs, worked in grain elevators and the like. He then went on to study metallurgy, becoming a railway engineer, but went to Korea where he saw action as a paratrooper and came back to basically work sort of odd jobs before eventually settling into working more on the railway, then working in insurance. And then the thing that I think kind of made his political career is a little shade of Ralph Klein here. Opening a bar called Hagen's Tavern.
So far, son of the century, right?
Yeah. Just he's swagged out.
Born into the 30s, does everything, gets shot at, shoots some people, fine, whatever, grain elevator.
Yeah.
This is Dick Whitman to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. The pub though, very Ralph Klein. Was he trying to source local eels for Buffalo cuisine, not really? Was he doing a lot of that?
Not as far as we know.
Okay.
So local historian Steve Keshawn said, a true man of the people and a one-time gin mill owner, Mayor Griffin poured a fine beer.
Yeah, we barely mill gin anymore.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
We stomp the gin blossoms by hand where I come from.
Yeah, so this is an extended quote from a book called, I really went deep on this one, a book called Against the Grain, History of Buffalo's First Ward by Timothy Bowen. The name Bowen will come up again, by the way, so just wait for that. Also, I do like, again, you should call it Against the Grain, a history of Buffalo's first and only ward. In an article, I'm just going to say first and only at this point, it's like Gaunt's Ghost. In an article about first and only ward legend and prize fighter Jimmy Slattery, Griffin shared his four heroes in life. His father, Rocco, Harry S. Truman, Warren Spahn, and Jimmy Slattery.
Period.
Okay. Truman is such a weird pull for this.
Truman, very yeah. weird.
It's crazy. Yeah.
That's another salt of the earth kind of salt of the earth type guy, you know?
Also, yeah. like, also I like he's like, well, a prize fighter, mm-hmm. a pitcher,
baseball player,
the yeah. guy who dropped the nuclear bomb, and of course, my dad.
Yeah.
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 Pitcher for the Buffalo Braves, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. If I'm remembering a guy right. Yeah.
Another funny thing that I noticed reading these notes, it's all like Irish guys who are named like Patrick, like the Canute O'Callaghan. Like they all have like Italian nicknames for no reason, even though they're Irish.
Upstate New York makes Italians of everybody, I think. Mm.
My grandpa was friends with Jimmy Griffin. I do full disclosure.
Just a billion guys named like Vito O'Doolahan.
Yeah, I didn't realize you were a Nepo baby. It's interesting.
I'm going to get to a list of names later, and you're going to see how right you are, Nova. of Harry S. Truman, Griffin said he made tough decisions. He wasn't afraid. He did what he thought was right. Griffin also mentioned that if he could meet one famous person in history, he would have liked to have meet St. Paul because, quote, he was a warrior. He knew how to sway people who listened to him.
Period.
Uh-huh.
He converted on the Damascus Road. Griffin also shared some of his philosophy on life in the First and Only Ward when he was describing Slattery. They loved Slattery for the way he fought, drank, and took care of the less fortunate, which is basically how Jimmy Griffin sees himself, except in his case, the less fortunate were people he knew personally from the First and Only Ward.
Here's the thing. If you take the prize fighter's belt and adjust it diagonally, it becomes the mayor's sash.
That's right. That's
This is also James Michael Curley thought. This is like the way that ward politics worked, right? Is that like the less fortunate were the less fortunate that you knew personally?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the mayor thing was like a competition between every ward, basically. Yes. And they all had to put up their guy. And whoever won was like, all right, the poor people in my ward, their swag, we can kind of like, you know, we can help them.
Mayoral Hunger Games.
Yeah, literally last night I went to the movies here and I saw the 1933 Jimmy Cagney film, The Mayor of Hell, which is about him taking over a reform school. But he is the guy in it. He's like a Tammany ass ward boss guy. And they just kind of show it happening. And I was thinking to myself, had I not been doing this show for the past year and a half, would I know what the fuck anyone is talking about? And the answer is no. And I'm so glad. But now I know about how The Mayor of Hell, it rocks if you can watch it.
So by the way, when you talk about ward politics, also in Buffalo, the wards are super explicitly race-based.
Okay, this is something I can talk about a little bit. Buffalo for a long time was, demographically speaking, by far the most segregated city in the United States of America. It was Buffalo, basically, like every single thing they did in New York State, and then later on in the rest of the country, they tested in Buffalo first to see what would happen. Like the highway system, they started building it in Buffalo, white flight. So like white flight happened there kind of before it happened anywhere else. And like every single neighborhood, it really is like Gangs of New York style, like until like 2000, it was Gangs of New York style. Like each race lived in a different neighborhood. And it's still
from the Irish Italian sort of mixing.
Well, no, because the Irish and Italians, they still like, they have like a tentative, kind of a tentative. No, even like the Italians didn't, they weren't first ward. The Italians were like a different area. I can't remember what it's called. Even though my family grew up there.
Yeah, there's a lot. I feel like there's a lot of towns in the Northeast in New England, like upstate New York and stuff, where it's like literally there is, like I grew up in a town that was mostly Irish and Italian, and there was an Italian side of town and an Irish side of town, even. Like even growing up me in the 90s and early 2000s, like that shit doesn't go away.
I didn't meet a Jewish kid until I was like 14. And he went, and because he went to a Catholic school.
So we'll see. Basically, a big part of this is also like kind of all at once, Irish, Polish, and Italians became white enough to sort of all kind of start voting together. And this really, influences sort of Griffin's career. But I say, how did this guy end up in politics? I want to just take a second, look at Buffalo in the latter half of the 20th century. Which is a city that was absolutely obliterated, but not by offshoring in NAFTA, but by the opening of the St. Lawrence Seaway. So again, like what NAFTA did to like the rest of the country that wasn't an elite coastal enclave, the St. Lawrence did to Buffalo like decades earlier. So yet again, Buffalo is the preview.
Canadianitude killed that's Buffalo. Right.
The entire 20th century is just Buffalo taking L after L, like completely, you know, like after, because at the turn of the century, they were completely, like, they were goated. Like, they had so much money. They had the Erie Canal. They had, like, all this shit going on. They built Tartaria.
Yeah, I was going to say, turn of the century, they're riding high having just killed Big Bill McKinley.
Yeah, literally, that was kind of the downfall of everything when they're like, oh, an Italian anarchist killed, which is, it's funny, like at the turn of the century, that was like radical Islamic terrorists was like Italian anarchists, which I think is pretty cool.
Hey, they're going to build a deli on the site of where they killed Big Bill McKinley.
And that's stealing valor because the guy who killed Big Bill McKinley was Big Billionly not Italian.
Yes, they got the wrong guy.
Wait, really?
Yeah, Leo Czolgosz.
Oh, yeah, Czolgosz is an Italian.
You ever heard of an Italian guy named Czolgosz? I mean, you will in a minute because Buffalo, but like...
Italo-hungry. Yeah.
Yeah, once.
I mean, honestly, even Leon Czolgosz is pushing it a bit, you know?
Like. So the other thing is, right, is that this, like, it is not just the St. Lawrence Seaway opening, but that's like a huge part of it. Like, Buffalo's economic reason to exist basically goes away. The steel, like Bethlehem steel closes and like that generates a lot of secondary jobs. Like Buffalo is fucked in a Rust Belt way, way before the Rust Belt got fucked in this way. It's the preview of things to come. And it's the perfect time for a sort of arrogant, drunk Irish buffoon to come and say, hey, I'm going to come knock some sense into these clowns in City Hall. So in 61, he runs for and he wins a seat in the Buffalo Common Council, City Council, where he first learned the meaning of machine politics and asked the question every scrappy former barfly asks when he discovers the concept, which is, like we alluded to earlier, hey, this is really unfair. Why don't I get to be in charge of the corruption and patronage?
Yes.
Yeah, why are my socks so empty of bills. Like crumpled dollar bills?
Why can't I slip my lubed up feet into a pair of Air Force Ones?
I mean, we still, honestly, we have yet to see, I think Zoran might be the first mayor who doesn't like just do this.
Yeah, I mean, this is the No Gods, No Mayors special, which is
everything's so
corrupt. I'm going to get in office and invent corruption too. And it's the same thing. Yeah.
I hope that if he does take this turn, that maybe Zoran is like, okay, corruption, but for like the pronouns mob, you know, we become like, you know, how trans people became white in America. We just have a guy in power now.
Mm-hmm. He's going to have like, he's going to replace the police with like a Sharia janissary corps that's like roaming around.
You misgender someone in New York, you catch a shillelagh beating.
Like. Yes. A shillelagh beating by a guy wearing a janissary hat, so it's very confusing.
Yeah, it's the big feather.
it's the same thing as like the green cars. In Iran, but like they come and like they come and give you a fine if you're assigned male at birth and not wearing a dress.
Yeah, there's a pronoun side of town, you know.
So, anyway, this is a quote. Another quote from Griffin's obituary: Joe Crangle was the Democratic Party boss.
No, stop.
Yeah,
I thought
you'd enjoy that.
Stop. Joe Crangle.
A lot of great names.
Stop the podcast.
Joseph Crangle to Mr. and Mrs. Crangle, a son Joseph.
Let me just tell you this: Joe Crangle. This is an appetizer in the name meal that we were about to consume.
Just an amuse-bouche.
Yeah, this is an amuse crangle.
Joseph F. Crangle, a guy who the first image of on Google is him yelling down a phone. Fantastic.
He's a Democrat. He's like a local Democratic.
How the hell do you use this thing?
He's a local Democratic Party boss. His entire life is just yelling at people.
He's wearing a straw hat in his obituary. Photo, that's really good. He's got the literal like straw hat with the blue band with the red band in it. The one that you punch through when you're mad when you lose in an election. Yeah.
So people were very frustrated. There were no jobs, industry was leaving, and the politicians seemed to be sucking us dry. But no one ever told Griffin what to do.
You've sucked Crangle dry for the last time.
No, Crangle's been sucking you dry is the problem.
Crangle is swollen and leaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My Crangle's fit to burst.
It's also, I must mention about the hat, that is a Music Man hat. So I think we do need to, that's a crossover point. Everyone listen to Trouble in River City. We didn't say the name. We forget to do that almost every episode of the podcast that we've done so far.
Don't worry, we'll get it. We'll get there. Yeah. We only learned the name of our first segment like 12 months in. So anyway, he persisted. He got a state Senate seat in 1966, and then he used what influence he could to try to build a machine outside of Kringle's for 11 years.
An anti-Kringle machine.
He tried to Kringle the Kringle.
I foiled you with my anti-Krangulator. Sure.
Yes.
He finally invented the anti-Krangulator.
One of the most baroque and horrifying machines. That's actually, it's very similar to a Bowflex. What's his name? That wrestler used a Bowflex, kind of like a makeshift Krangulator, decrangulator.
Actually, it's interesting. They've if a guy like assassinated Joe Krangle in like 1973 with a homemade gun, we'd have called it the anti-Krangulator.
Joe Krangly, this is.
Okay, so
they announce the election. He shows up in a U-Haul with the anti-crangulator in the back and just lights it off outside City Hall.
He's just winding it up for like 20 minutes and saying to Krangle, "You stand right the fuck on this X while I warm up."
Blows on a domino a mile away.
Weirdly, it's just a boxing glove on a spring that punches through his hat.
Me and my friends at the band OK Go have developed this anti-crangulator.
The last thing it does is it fires a giant medieval ballista, but all that does is open a box with a hamburger in it so he gets high cholesterol. So Griffin persisted. Like I say, he got this state Senate seat in 66, tried to build the anti-crangulator machine. But while he was doing that, he governs for 11 years as like an austerity Democrat, basically.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Sure.
So here's Bowen again. Griffin befriended Jimmy McMahon, who held a powerful position at Bethlehem Steel. And through McMahon's assistance, Griffin was able to get 50 First Ward friends jobs at the steel mill. Now they all owed him favors. So he gets the rank and file of the union at the steel mill, basically to follow him rather than the union leadership.
Assembling some goons.
Mm-hmm. His administration, and hold that thought, staff were loaded with trusted advisors from the Irish section of the city, such as his longtime friend, John Skanoots Scanlon.
Yes.
Dave and James Comerford. Okay. Rick Donovan. Should have been Ray Donovan.
That's his dad.
Donald Bughead Smith.
Yes.
Stan Boots Bazowski.
Yes.
George Ortsey Gould. John B. Myers. And Danny Bowen. So I think maybe a relationship with the author here.
Yeah, these are Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle villains. Boots,
Bughead. Do you think he ever sent like Scanlon and Bazowski out on something together so it would be Boots and Skanoots?
Yo! They were like thing one and thing two.
Ortsy, get me Boots and Skanoots.
They're wearing little sweaters that say Boots and Skanoots. But there's the wrong one. There's arrows pointing to the other one. They're holding hands.
Yeah, I just got the shit kicked out of me by Boots and Skanoots.
They sleep in a bed together. They're holding hands. They eat all their meals together.
Old-timey bedsteads. Yeah.
Mm. Hey, Bughead, go help Boots and Skanoots.
The anti-crangulator's jammed.
Dr. fucking Seuss-ass town.
What the fuck was wrong with Bughead? Did he have like a kind of like faceted eye? Like an insect? Like what the
fuck? Yeah, he was covered in sort of a rough chitin, I think, was the problem with him.
What the fuck is this? Is the First Ward fucking Whoville? Like, why is everybody named this?
Yeah, they call me this because of my prominent antenna.
God. Okay, so this is from a Facebook group called Proud as the Lord, I Was Born in the Ward. And this is, what of Gene McCarthy's SAC picnics? Jackie Flood, Jimmy Daly, Jackie Foo Foo Felshow, Billy Green, Don Bughead Smith, and Jimmy Bucky Conway. So we have a picture of Bughead. I will now share it.
Please.
I will share it.
What does his head look like?
Well, we're gonna have to figure that out because
big fucking proboscis on this guy.
Show me.
Okay,
Bughead.
Everybody, check your WhatsApps.
Oh,
I'm seeing Bughead.
Is he the guy looking at the camera?
Okay, these are fantastic. These are some like heavy set white guys in trucker caps with the long set like 70s hair and the big mustaches.
This will be in the Patreon post.
Okay, that one guy, you can see his ass crack through his khakis. On the chair.
Yeah, it's like, crazy work.
Like, yeah, that's awesome. That's the first Ward Grey sweatpants trick is you just wear just khakis so tight you could see your ass crack.
Yeah, so I would like this to be the episode art if we can swing it. This is horrifying.
Is Jimmy in this photo?
No, he is not, unfortunately. We can at least include this photo.
He was the one taking it.
I will put this photo in the Patreon post for sure. Riley already sent me a very good photo to use as the episode art.
So this is, by the way, the obituary for Brian Smith. Smith Brian passed away November 5th, 2021. Beloved son of the late Donald Bughead and Debbie Shine Smith. Dear brother of Maureen Leonard, Daniel Smith, and Christopher Smith.
I'm in the comments here. From Brian Smith, I know my eyesight is not that great, but I do not see my father Bughead. And Bughead is in camel case. Bughead is the one wearing the cowboy hat. So his back is to us. We can't see what is up with his fucking head.
Well, that's why he wore the cowboy hat famously.
And then Brian Smith again, this was 7 years ago, mind you, replying, I know he had every hat except a cowboy hat.
Whoa. Crazy.
This is getting Dr. Seussian. He owned one of every hat.
But never a cowboy hat. I remember when my dad Bughead used to go out to the bar wearing the historical crown of the Emperor of Siam, but you know he would never be seen in a cowboy hat.
My beloved dead father, may his memory be a blessing, Bughead, used to go out in one of his almost infinite hats with boots and skanoots and ortsy.
In one of his fractal hats, one of his ascot fascinators.
A sort of imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus-esque closet of hats.
I was going to say, he had the closet into cartoon hammer space, and he would reach in and he would withdraw the Janissary helmet.
Yeah. We are 42 minutes into the episode and I am three paragraphs in.
Well,
we spent so much time on boots and fucking skanoots.
No. And you know what? They weren't the mayor of Buffalo and did a bunch of fucked up stuff. So I do, you know, I don't feel as fine about, you know, yelling at them. Who knows? They might have been great.
They're civilians. But yeah. I've done a lot of bits targeted at Bughead. but like the comments seem to think Bughead was a good guy. Like this looks like a photo of like 8 Frank Sobotkas, right? Like it's stunning.
No, so, and I mean the location, wherever this was, is like, this is what the interior of every building in Buffalo looked like until like 2004. Yeah.
A group of Frank Sobotkas is called a loading dock. Riley, move on, please.
Thank you very much, Maddie. Mm-hmm. So this was the beginning. If you remember what we were talking about, this was him building his independent political machine of boots and skanoots and ortsy and Buckhead.
These men comprise the anti-crangulator.
Of a certain name.
And this was the beginning. Yes, this was the beginning of the end. This was the beginning of the Griffin machine replacing the Krangle machine, the anti-crangulator. The Krangle machine backed a man called
Krangulator.
Yeah, the Krangulator crangulated on Arthur Eve, who was the first black man.
I don't know when that is in the year.
The first black man to ever win the Buffalo local Democratic primary. Eve beat Griffin, but they both beat Krangle's handpicked nominee. So Griffin and the Irish would have to wait their term. But no, Griffin would not stand for a black person being mayor of Buffalo. So he ran in the Conservative Party line instead and won a three-way race, consolidating the Irish and Polish vote. And these particular voters, all registered Democrats, by the way, spot welded themselves to Griffin until they all died, which is how he stayed in power.
Stunning
for so
victory for racism.
Yes.
A ton of people. I mean, also, I'm not saying that he wasn't racist, but I think maybe one of the main other things, reasons that he like had to beat this guy is also because he really, really wanted to be mayor. Like he was like, this would be so sick if I was the mayor. But yeah, I do, you know, he for sure, like everyone's racist in Buffalo. I don't think we've ever had a non-racist mayor, and that includes Byron Brown. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, so the Washington Post said of this election, a classic liberal blacks, conservative whites contest. And for the first time in 20 years, the entrenched Democratic machine is watching from the sidelines. The main loser was Joseph F. Krangle, the powerful Erie County Democratic chairman. Who has controlled Buffalo politics for years, but no longer. But like Arthur Eve, like he had like crosses burned outside his house. It was so racist.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. It's not good.
This is from the New York Times. In a campaign short on issues, Mr. Griffin was generally regarded as the law and order anti-welfare candidate who attacked his black opponent as soft on crime, opposed to the death penalty, and as a foe of welfare and pension reform.
Much like Hawk Tour, yep. I don't know that this guy is the kind of racist to be able to think of this himself, right? Not that he's not very racist, but what I suspect is that this is like the fucking vampire operative from out of town comes in and tells you how to run the racist campaign and the rest of it handles itself because
right.
Boots and Skanoots are doing the kind of, not to accuse named people of individual acts of racism here, but like you have guys for the like, you know, the cross burning stuff,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, like, I mean, I feel pretty comfortable saying not a single one of these people was not racist.
Yeah.
Because I think they all were.
Crucially, I think, context-wise about Buffalo, this is like on the eve, historically, of the city becoming majority black.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
So there's clearly
the
like palpable,
if you will,
you know, tension in the air here from the white people.
He governs, you know, as you'd expect him to govern. He slashes taxes, slashes spending, fires 1,000 civil servants, and then hopes that by keeping property taxes low, the people who are too old to need municipally provided services or are like making enough money that they don't care, right? This is his constituency, right? It's the same people voting for him every single time who just get older with him. Mm-hmm. And he just keeps their property taxes low, funds whatever service they need locally. And then it's just like a bolus going down the throat of Buffalo that you cannot pass until they all just fucking die. That's basically it. So Griffin said, I campaigned on very simple ideas. Everybody said, you've got a simple solution to everything. Well, that's the way life is. You can't make it complex. If the people in a neighborhood say they want a stop sign, then you give them a stop sign. I don't wait for surveys. I think there should be more police on streets. I don't wait for the crime statistic. I believe in a simple way of doing things. More than experts, we need people with common sense in government. But of course,
so
what we really know,
finally. Yeah.
What we really know is what that meant was, if he likes you and you ask for something, he will make it happen for you because you're in a patronage relationship with him.
Yeah. Right.
It also means that there are a ton of decisions that will occur that eventually, years later, will cause an incredible domino effect of consequences completely unforeseen that, you know, like...
Did you know that if you play a Paradox game and you don't hit the button for an event, it will just keep going and run another like 30 days or so without the event firing? And you can just store up all the bad news and just kind of go, I don't believe in all of that. That lives in this corner of the screen for 30 days.
So what he did manage to do as well was he relentlessly pursued state and federal funding so he could subsidize the construction of stuff. And the thing is, people fucking love seeing buildings go up. Under his tenure, there were hotels built, TGI Fridays. Mm-hmm. Eventually, a sports field was built that the Buffalo Minor League Baseball team still plays at today. It is, I believe, it's the most popular minor league baseball team, I believe, in the States.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
They used to be able to support a major league team there. So I imagine the appetite was high.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, but it was like they brought a minor league team to Buffalo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I'm like, just saying I'm having a hard time thinking of another city besides Oakland that's about to lose their team that lost a major league team and didn't get another one. So, yeah.
So this is, by the way, from also a theme. This is from the New York Times article about the 85 election. See that? He gestured at a gleaming stretch of new buildings along the Lake Erie waterfront. All that stuff was built since I've been mayor. Mr. Griffin said downtown had been revived, that he inherited a red ink budget and put the city in the black. His opponents say all the redevelopment plans started from before he was mayor, and the administration's planning was haphazard at best, which I buy, because he mostly governed by bouncing from bar to bar. Articles featuring him always contain wording like, I'm quoting here, Mr. Griffin didn't disagree. He put down his stein of beer next to a platter of chicken wings in the pastime grill. Then it was off to Danny Zach's for more of the same, or stuff like another article. After meeting with his top advisors at Kennedy's Tavern, blah, blah, blah. Like, constantly, he's never not at bars.
It's like someone making fun of the mayor of Buffalo, be like, what are you going to do, eat a bunch of chicken wings? Do nothing else?
Yeah. I'll wait for another beer. Gotta go.
Hesse, that's like largely right? Like, I was really struck by this. It just, everything I read, he's always being interviewed at a bar.
Yeah.
Or like a tavern or a sports bar.
of West Wing walk and talk, but it was like, slow down.
A kind of shambling talk, you know? Yeah. Like shuffling from bar to bar, collapsing in four different snowdrifts in between them.
Everybody's hands are covered in like red sauce.
So what was Jimmy Griffin like as mayor? Rather than run through a list of everything that happened during his four terms, I want to pick some highlights or lowlights. If you're not a, stop me if you've heard this before, older white retired blue-collar homeowner.
Yeah, so. the guy from Gran Torino that this guy built his fucking anti-crangulator on top of.
100%.
My grandpa, basically.
Yeah, 100%. So
my grandpa built the anti-crangulator, thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm very proud. Very proud to say... a machinist from Sicily who, you know, was like, this guy is not so bad. Even though he used to be a Democrat. He didn't talk like that, but...
is your grandfather Steven Seagal?
he talked more like this, very quiet, you know.
My grandfather, who never got out of a chair, but every time one of us got out of line, we'd go right to the ground.
And if you talk out a turn, you have to do a backflip. So for example, that's jarring shift in tone here. In 1980, there was a serial killing of black men in Buffalo based on the city becoming majority black. There was like a guy, they found the guy who did it eventually. And Griffin responded to this by doing and saying nothing, then banning a Nazi rally in support of the killings and an anti-Nazi counter-protest countering support of the killings, and instead said that, quote, we will organize a separate event to honor Dr. King, which would turn out to be largely in the abstract.
Kind of the concept, you know? Yeah.
Honestly, like, good on him for canceling the Nazi the Nazi rally in support of the killings. Well,
it's patronage again, right? It's like, I don't want, like, some outside Nazi to come over and do, like, my Nazi stuff.
Yeah, they're taking jobs from local to American Himmlers.
I like to believe that, like, with guys like this, it's like they see a Nazi and they're like, you know, because they're from the 30s, they're like, that's bad. Like, but it's completely disconnected from their own politics and their own thoughts on, like, everything. So they're like, not in my city.
Yeah.
And then they just, like, kind of do, like, policies that are slowly Nazify everything over time.
Oh yeah, it's like, oh, hey, they're the villains. Like this isn't an evil city. Evil city's over there.
It's un-American to personally care that much. You should be doing recreational racism at the most, you know?
But also, like, the other thing is Griffin was personally named as a defendant in the Arthur v. Nyquist school desegregation case. Like, He really tried to keep the city segregated. He tried so hard. People love this, right? So he wins another term in 1982, and I'm going to list the parties he was endorsed by.
Well, I'm guessing white people loved this.
Well, yes. The people who voted for him, who were always making up just enough people to get him in, loved it. So I'm going to list the parties that he won the endorsement of in the 1982 election. So conservative, the same one he won the first time. Republican, Right to Life, mm-hmm. and Democratic.
Sure.
He won all four. He won all four primaries.
Mm-hmm. It's called making the four, and it's not easy.
So next election, he got all but Democratic, and then all four again. And by the way, again, the 85 election where he loses the Democratic nomination, he loses against George T. Arthur, former head of Buffalo City Council, and another man who would have been Buffalo's first black mayor. Basically, Jimmy Griffin loves being mayor of Buffalo, and he refuses to not be mayor of Buffalo.
Yeah, and he's like the last ditch of whiteness, like him and his like 80 francs of vodkas.
Yeah, 100%. This is also, by the way, the term where he gets into a very famous high-profile...
Just thinking about an Irish guy who's kind of a bit Italian in his own mind trying to pronounce Après-moi le déluge.
Listen up,
it
man.
It contains a racial slur when he says it.
Apers moi. Yeah.
Apers moi. Beep. So this is the term also in which he gets into a fight with local artist Billy Lawless over an allegedly phallic piece of public art, which gets him so mad that he has it torn down at night and a judge orders him to restore it.
Just like, you put that penis back up there.
Yeah, he did do a lot. He dispatched a lot of people. It's maybe my favorite thing about him. There's one that I think we're about to get to shortly, but he would often dispatch people to do stuff in the parks and still like take stuff down at night, which is really cool.
He did so much park mischief, or his yeah. goons did so much park mischief as mayor.
Yeah, I'm looking at the sculpture, which is called Green Lightning, and I gotta be honest, that's some dicks. Sure.
Oh yeah.
I don't think that he should have been allowed to remove it under cover of night by a sign company.
Sending boots and skanoots in the dead of night to remove the penises from the park.
Yeah. Hey,
boots and skanoots, there's penises in the park. Go and deal with it.
Yeah, these hey boots skanoots, these dicks got a skadoosh, and he, you know, rings the bell.
Just like get completely serious boots being like, got it, boss. Just taking this down on a pad like in boots. Yeah, and boots, skanoots to skadoosh.
The thing's got a what, boss? It's got a skadoosh? Forgot about it. I'm Irish. Oh, kiss me. I'm Irish here.
Hey, it's the wearing of the green, huh? Yeah. Uh-huh.
Listen, oh, you, boy. Listen, you little punk. You respect St. Patrick. He drove the fucking snakes out of Ireland. Yeah. Oh my God. Well, I guess we
taught a large language model exclusively on Scorsese movies.
I swear to God. I swear to God, it happens every episode. We find the thing, and I guess this is the one for this one.
Yeah, Irish-Italian cultural exchange. Yes.
Yeah.
So he also gives his most famous quote, it almost becomes a catchphrase, sort of, in 1985, about a famous blizzard. Like a really horrible Western New York blizzard. It's like 12-foot snowdrifts and stuff. Like really kind of dangerous. He says, stay inside, grab a six-pack, and watch a good football game. Have a six-pack handy so you can enjoy yourself. Don't take this too seriously. The previous blizzard had multiple fatalities.
Period.
I like this about the guy at least.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. He's a character.
Yeah.
It's sort of Homer Simpsonian. Like the little bits where sort of like the Simpsons gestures at this kind of like working class male affect, sort of working class white male affect, is like, I don't know. I'm into it. I'm into the idea of like, because the football is not on. You are watching like a VCR tape of a football game that you previously have recorded with your six pack of beer. Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
This young kid OG Simpson is going places.
But if he's ever suspected of a crime, I'm going to assume that he did it.
Riley coming out is thinking OJ is innocent.
Sending boots and skadoots cross country so that they can be on OJ's fucking innocence project.
It's boots, skadoots, Alan Dudes Dershowitz.
Alan the Dudes Dershowitz.
Oh, I love the mayor. I love mayor as a concept.
Sorry.
Marsha Marone Clark.
No president has ever been surrounded by boots and skanoots. And it's great for me.
Joe Biden may have been.
In his younger one years. Time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Biden, this is what they thought they were like. That this is what like WASPs thought would happen when Kennedy got elected. There would just be a guy called Skanoots with his like his feet up on the like on the Resolute desk.
It is true. All right, so one of the other things here. Let's talk about jobs to the boys. Let's talk about what are boots and Skanoots going to do now. So this is from the Washington Post about his final campaign.
Just like if you elect Kennedy, there's going to be a guy with like a kind of semi-shaved head wearing a too small bowler hat. Like and a pair of hobnail boots, just walking around the Oval Office,
swinging
beating everyone with a shillelagh.
Yeah.
Also, it's especially funny to picture if you know what Buffalo City Hall and the mayor's office looks like, because it is the biggest city hall in America. I'm pretty sure it's so beautiful.
Oh my God! What a monstrous! That's like the size. It looks actually very similar to the New York City Hall a little bit.
Yeah,
isn't this the one that the city doesn't own anymore and that all of the kind of foundation is hollow?
Oh.
What?
I can't remember. I think that might be, you might be thinking of the Buffalo Central Terminal.
I probably am. Oh, that's a gigantic city hall.
And I'm also thinking of the big federal building that's next to New York City Hall is what I'm thinking about also, not New York City Hall.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of buildings in Buffalo were like, they were built as kind of like tests to see if they would work in New York. Like it was we'll get to it later, but Delaware Park, which is kind of the park in the main city park in Buffalo, was designed and built by Frederick Law Olmsted, who would eventually go on to build City Hall, or not City Central Hall, Park. Central Park in New York City as kind of a test type.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a test type to see, like there's a lot of amazing architecture and shit in Buffalo.
The top of the Buffalo City Hall is so beautiful. Wow.
Yeah, it's a beautiful building. Yeah. There's a lot of, despite its garishness, if you will, the decadence of it.
So this is from the Washington Post from his last victorious campaign in 89. Although Griffin denies it, many blacks have complained that he has ignored their neighborhoods on matters ranging from snow plowing to summer jobs. Only one of his 14 cabinet members is black. Mary Davis, host of a local black radio station's talk show, said, "Mayor Griffin's a sharp politician, but he's also a callous and insensitive human being. He's a racist and he's anti-intellectual. He resents anybody who can conjugate a verb, and he has a knack for bringing out the worst in people." Because when it came to jobs, and this is me again, Griffin is as you'd expect. He even acknowledged that, no, he personally approves every hire and promotion in every city department, but he promised that politics was not involved in his decisions. Super promise. Although, apparently, Democratic Party connections were found to influence like one in every five mid-level appointments. For example, he appointed his brother Parks Commissioner because he was, quote, a good basketball coach. More on him now.
Yeah, this is my favorite part of the my favorite part of the tale, if you will. This is why I picked Jimmy Griffin as the mayor emeritus.
Oh, so this is from that same 89 WAPO article I referenced a few times. Griffin continues to defend his brother Tommy. He complained that Tommy, who served time in prison for lying about his residency in a Florida real estate transaction, had been, quote, crucified by the news media.
This Buffalo newspaper is crucifying my brother.
It's crucifying my Irish-Italian brother, Tommy.
He's doing the Tommy John Griffin. Malkovich and Burn After Reading This Is a Crucifixion at the press conference.
To be crucified is like the worst thing you can be in when you're two Catholic cultures at the same time.
So the other thing is, though, that Tommy...
That's like getting crucified twice.
Mm-hmm. Like,
crucified.
Hessa, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the real story is Bobby Delano, not Tommy Griffin.
Yeah.
Basically, so Tommy Griffin goes to jail for lying on a real estate transaction.
Oh, is it a crime to lie in a transaction now?
And then Mayor Griffin is like, okay, I guess I can't name my brother Parks Commissioner. I suppose I will have to name my friend and former Parks Commissioner Robert Delano in 1985. Then he was Parks Commissioner for a few years, and a few odd things happened when Bobby Delano was Parks Commissioner of Buffalo. That resulted in late 1989, the FBI initiating a corruption probe into the Buffalo Departments of Parks and Regulation. And the irregularities they found spiraled into, I'm going to quote again from the New York Times, different article. The accusations by unidentified park workers who say they fear retribution range from the minor. For example, the Parks Department is said to buy three times as much food for each of its dogs as the police department does. To the outrageous.
Just really fat dogs walking around.
We got the fattest dogs.
Why does the Parks Department have dogs?
Okay, I was going to say, they're in the park, so they're a little more free range. They might need more food than the police dogs who are riding around in cars. Think about it.
Well, they can just eat the grass.
It's because a fat dog seems honorable to him because it seems healthy, you know?
Fat dog seems honorable.
A fat dog seems honorable.
A fat dog seems honorable.
This is a dog of unusual size and strength.
Mm-hmm. I believe that dog subscribes to the code
of
Bushido.
I want the dog to have the same BMI as I do.
A rotund hound is a beautiful sight to everyone.
I need you to make this dog a doggy waist-length leather jacket that's too big.
Your Honor, who doesn't love a rotund hound?
Buffalo Department of Parks and Rec was genuinely at the forefront of international science of attempts to like breed a dog that could have a mustache.
Yes. They wanted, oh, those guys in that Facebook photo wanted to be hanging out with a dog that could have a mustache and drink beer so badly. It's
a bunch of guys in XXL lab coats synthesizing dog particles in the lab trying to find one they could put a trucker hat on.
But the First Ward's greatest scientists.
But, yeah, we got Dino the microbiologist.
There's eight scientists.
Yeah, we call him Jimmy Microbes.
Six of them are just sitting on lawn chairs while the other two work.
A guy at the Parks and Rec lab screams Eureka because he taught a dog how to sing "Take Me Out to the Ball Game."
Yeah. It's, if you've ever been to a Bills tailgate, it's like for a mile around the stadium, there are all these scientists with doing little experiments in their makeshift labs that they kind of set up outside the stadium. Mm-hmm.
So the Buffalo News reported on January 13th that Mr. Delano had ordered them to dump barrels of an anti-icing compound onto the ice of Delaware Park Lake during the winter of 87-88 to ruin it for skating after the Buffalo Common Council closed an unauthorized concession stand.
Yeah, I want you to ruin the dreams of children.
Yeah.
Wait, why would they do that?
Well, I'll tell you why. It's because the city council voted to crack down on unauthorized concession stands, like operated in the gray market by park workers for Bobby Delano.
Yeah. And this, again, they dumped this antifreeze into the lake, Hoyt Lake, it's called. They dumped it like in the dead of night, basically. And it's still. It still does not freeze to this day. It's ruined forever. Like you will. It's impossible to skate on even
Jesus
to this day.
Jesus Christ!
And to be clear, because of a inter-Nissan local politics park argument, no one will ever skate on Lake Hoyt again.
Because this one guy can't skim money from the hot dog cart.
Yeah.
Christ.
Correct. Yes. That's why.
That's an evil guy. That's an evil man.
Yeah. Bobby Delano. But like Jimmy Griffin is his hand is not far from this.
Of course.
But Delano threatened everyone in the department with losing their overtime unless they facilitated his other wacky schemes, such as he bought an additional $46,000 worth of swimming pool chlorine, which was mostly sold to a local pool supplier for his personal profit.
10 tons. That's 10 tons of chlorine, by the way.
He bought so much. A lot of his schemes involve. You know what it is? If I had a nickel for every one of Bobby Delano's schemes that involved chlorine, I would have two nickels, but it's weird I'd have two.
That's Buffalo science once again. There's a reason why they called it the chemist's war.
Yeah. You'd have two Buffalo nickels, you could say.
So, free services to private businesses, such as garbage pickup for favored pizza companies, tree removal for a company called Nick's Texas Hots, softball diamond prep for St. Timothy's Church, or maintenance at the Buffalo Tennis and Racquetball Center. They dug a quarter mile long trench to the city's front park so that the parks commissioner could enjoy cable TV at his city-owned apartment.
I'm wondering if Nick's Texas Hots, because there's another, every single hot dog place in Buffalo is incredibly good, but also they all have a crazy split and feud between two brothers and then open up to a rival hot dog place. Because I've never heard of Nick's Texas Hots, but there is another place called, I think, Louis Texas Red Hots. And I'm wondering if they're brothers who are related in some way.
Third brother, Anthony's Texas Colts.
So yeah, in the Facebook page Buffalo, a toast to the town, someone says, "What happened to Nick's Red Hots?" I think I misspoke. I think it was Nick's Red Hots. Anyway, park workers also washed, waxed, and maintained cars for Delano, Griffin, Griffin's wife, Griffin's brother while he was in jail, the police commissioner. They did tree removal. And also Griffin never paid to use city resources.
In jail, on the phone, being like, "You're having my car waxed while I'm in here, right?"
I love the idea that the parks commission, the parks department, was kind of the Sea Org of this administration.
It's Pond Org, yeah.
This is the New York Times again. Mr. Delano has refused to respond to allegations. The department's main receptionist hung up the phone Thursday as soon as a reporter identified himself. And Mayor Griffin stood behind his friend, describing workers who talked to the FBI and to reporters as, quote, "stool pigeons and malcontents."
He's so cool. So, sometimes I'm like, this guy is swagged out.
Yeah.
Like, I would love like, a TV show about... Yeah.
Snitching is bad. We can all agree.
Yeah, people are just like, hey, there's huge corruption in the Parks Department. It's like, hey, no snitching.
Come on. What the hell?
The mayor said, no snitching.
So, if they didn't want to wax my car, they should have quit.
Probably get a job at Nick's Texas Red Hots. Oh. So, some have questioned the policies of the Parks Department, including workers, reporters, and elected officials, have found windows in their homes and cars smashed. There's also been news reports that records show that Robert Delano is neither a high school graduate nor a Vietnam veteran, as he claimed.
Stealing valor the whole time?
His discharge from the Marine Corps in 58 was under, quote, other than honorable conditions.
Which... That's really crazy. I've never even heard of that discharge condition. Like, yeah. Not even dishonorable, but like, it wasn't dishonorable.
Yeah, he was
but...
trying to get the other Marines to wax his Jeep.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like other than honorable is just like, he tried to like start a lottery in his unit or something. So
let's just say it was other than honorable.
You guys seen the Deer Hunter? He's like putting one bullet into a pistol.
Like, shoots himself in
the head. Out a deck of cards.
So Griffin would then go on to say, Bob Delano was my friend. He's always going to be my friend. He was convicted. He's going to pay the price, but he was a good boss at the Parks Department.
Period.
Yeah. Say what you will about him as a Parks Department commissioner, but that pond or lake never froze over ever again, which means he's winning the war on ice.
So
that's a legacy.
That's a legacy you can remember forever.
And this is outside the fact, by the way, that Griffin like can't stop punching people, yanking ties, like challenging opposition in the council chamber to fist fights. He once was described by a city hall reporter as having, quote, sucker punched him.
Cool.
See, this image of this of Jimmy Griffin doing the like 1930s pugilist pose, like kind of like the Fighting Irish logo, where he's, you know, front foot way out, like hands going crazy in the front. It's beautiful.
I found what could be another good image. I'm just going to send it. I'm going to send it to everybody here.
Okay.
Please look at your WhatsApps again.
Can I read can I describe this, please?
At the end of the episode. Oh, wait, because they're going to have seen it, of course. Yeah, please.
Yeah. It's a...
why is it so low resolution?
It's a screenshot from what looks to be ABC7 in Buffalo, or CBS, whatever. Anyway,
ABC, Channel 7.
That's right. Same as here. But anyways, it's a guy in a beanie and a trench coat. Look, maybe a reporter. It says 1985. Chiron, new beer unveiled honoring the late Jimmy Griffin. Beautiful.
That is Jimmy Griffin.
Amazing.
That is Jimmy Griffin.
That's a picture of him in 85. He died in 2008.
I see. Well, I'll put that in the old Patreon post as well.
He was not looking well.
I was wondering why it seems like my shed is filling up with smoke. That is not smoke. That is reflections from my light. Okay. All right. So thank you, Riley.
Steam.
Pretty clever.
It's a beautiful Emily Dickinson quote. Thank you, Riley.
So Griffin admitted he was pugnacious, but added after, basically, it was like, hey, how come you're always punching people? He was like, I may be pugnacious, but I'm always true to myself.
Period.
Yeah. So his last act as mayor was getting really anti-abortion with it. In the 89 campaign, Griffin declared that abortions were the major reason that Buffalo's population had shrunk by 100,000 in the last 20 years.
Okay, Freakonomics, relax for a moment about it.
Well, Freakonomics comes to the opposite.
That's right. Yeah. Freakonomics says crime goes down because of abortion, I think, which is awful.
Yeah, yeah.
He's so, you know what he's doing? He's doing the aborted electorate meme. I would have voted for you, Anon. You could have given
also,
me a nickname.
Also, the guy who wrote Freakonomics, also from Buffalo.
really?
So, Griffin said, absolutely. Can't you see that? Those kids would have been born. Don't you see that?
Don't you see?
Do you see? Grappling with the subjunctive for the first time in my life.
Do you see the electorate transformed? Mm-hmm.
It's like there's a kid there, except the kid isn't there because the kid wasn't alive to have been born, but it would have been born. And then if it had been born, it would be here, but it's not.
It would be here and it would vote for me. It would have been voting for me. if it hadn't been aborted.
It's like diagramming out the sentence in midair, like, it would have been here.
Also, like, it's like the city of Buffalo, like, it, like, the population went so far down, but also, like, the metro area, the population stayed pretty even because of people just like moving to suburbs, and like, you know, it's all white flight basically, and people just like leaving the city to go you know, to put cities that aren't dead basically.
Yeah, so basically he also follows this up in 1991 by inviting an organization called Operation Rescue to Buffalo, where they basically just picket every abortion clinic in town. A bunch of them get arrested. And this event was strongly implicated, though never formally connected, I believe, to the murder of a doctor who performed abortion some years later. The doctor, a man named Dr. Barnett Slepian, was personally targeted in 1992 by the man, James Kopp, who would later kill him in 1998.
And to be clear, when he was sort of like using all of this stuff, he didn't care. It was just kind of convenient to him.
I think he might. I actually think Jimmy Griffin might have really cared about stuff like this, because he was like really, he was very Catholic. Like, he was a true believer in this stuff.
Also, I just, in the name of being even-handed, I'm really sorry, but I just have to lightly, it's a tragedy, but the name Dr. Barnett Slepian is crazy. It's crazy. That's a Thomas Pynchon name.
I was thinking it was crazy work.
I think I'm gonna put a separate compartment.
And killed by James Kopp, also.
James Kopp, K-O-P-P, Keystone Cop himself. Yeah.
He's the cop killer, and there we go. Here's the thing. I really thought you were going to be like, okay, Riley, you actually don't have that detail quite right. You know, Operation Rescue, they weren't really invited.
No. I thought it was going to be like a rare sort of like pro-life turn.
Oh my God.
We got to like, you know, think about the kind of controversy here.
No,
you
I
know?
Just feel bad like, because this guy who is like assassinated has a really funny name.
The name Barnett Slepian, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only other abortion doctor whose name I can think of off the top of my head is that guy who had that really horrible abortion place named Kernet Gosnell or something. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I only know the names of two abortion doctors now, and they're both very funny names. So I'm like... You know,
it's the
maybe
field of medicine you get into when you're like, well, I've already had people laugh at my name my whole life, so getting shot in my driveway isn't going to be that much worse.
Getting my house firebombed is...
You know what I'm doing? I'm preventing people from being born who would otherwise make fun of my name.
Yes.
And you try and explain this to the mayor and he just looks at you.
Yeah,
he looks right past you. All right, so, of course, Griffin was also as homophobic and misogynistic as he was racist.
Oh, so he was
obviously.
Cool.
Yeah, he had cool opinions.
He was racist, which is bad, but he was homophobic, which is good.
The type of guy who like thinks of himself as an equal opportunity offender because he is racist to everyone.
Mm.
Except, of course, for the an Irish guy who thinks of himself as a bit Italian. So, in 1993, everyone hated all of this so much that Griffin finally hung up his sash, saying that he completed his record of 16 years as mayor, a record not broken until Byron Brown also got elected in the same ways by losing the Democratic primary and then rat-fucking the social justice and racial equality-oriented winner that the Democratic Party agrees it wished it didn't nominate. Again, if I had a nickel for every time this had happened in Buffalo, I'd have two nickels, and it would be weird that I'd have that many nickels.
Yeah,
if you had a wild wing for every time this had happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could fly to the moon. Uh-huh.
So, before we end, because I'm coming to the denouement now. Hesse, have I missed anything about Jimmy Griffin that leaps to your mind?
I mean, not really. Nothing that I can think of off the top of my head. I think he definitely. There were a bunch of like minor league sports teams that came when like during his tenure. We had an indoor soccer team called the Buffalo Stallions, which my grandpa was the general manager of, I believe.
Yo. And,
your grandpa the machinist. Built the decrangulator?
Yeah. That was pretty swagged. I think he like, that. I think that's how they knew each other. Was because he was like, I'm trying to get more sports in here, you know? Mm. which we already talked about, the baseball stadium. And yeah, that's pretty much all I can think of off the top of my head.
Well,
the time that he made the pond stop freezing forever
because of an argument.
That's my favorite. Yeah. That's one of the funniest, like literally going in at night and just like, people were like, why are there guys dumping barrels of something into Hoyt Lake?
So what happened? As a mayor, he left Buffalo with a few more buildings, a minor league baseball team, gutted public services, because, you know, he gutted public services because his kids, another Ward 1 Irish and Polish kids, went to Catholic school. They didn't give a shit. Entrenched poverty in minority neighborhoods, and also get a lake that was polluted on purpose forever to an internecine municipal grudge about hot dog stands. In 1996...
Whoa. God damn it. Hold on. Sorry. The very last sentence as I tap back to the notes.
Yeah. Okay.
Uh-huh.
In 1996, he entered the New Hampshire Democratic presidential primary against Bill Clinton, finishing, quote, a very distant eighth. In 1997, he attempted to reclaim the mayoralty, running solely on the right to life line and losing badly. And basically lost most things that he tried to do from then on.
Oh, they're aborting the fucking kids.
Then on. Although he did get back into the Buffalo Common Council for a while before eventually resigning in 2007. In 2008, he died of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease.
Fucking excuse me?
Which is crazy.
The most, like, body horror, like, prion disease shit. I mean, I know people, like, it's like, you know, people eat venison and stuff, but, like, this guy's brain could have been rotting for decades, potentially, when he was doing all of this shit. And you're like, as you're watching this guy try and diagram out the hypothetical existence of a kid who has now been aborted, and you're like, is there something wrong with this guy? Or is he like sucker punching reporters for no reason? Or being like, yeah, dig a trench through a park so my brother can get cable. He could have been fucking melting from the inside.
Yes.
This is horrifying.
Also, like, as a Catholic, how do you not see that as like God reached down from heaven and stuck his finger in my brain? Like,
this is the idea that there is a kind of like a potential, like, sort of biological, pathological determinant to mayoral brain is a terrifying prospect.
But all mayors could have Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease.
Maybe that's the thing that makes you a mayor.
Yeah, maybe when you if you're eating mayor meat, be very careful. Just
and maybe Zoran's the first person to not have it because he's halal.
We gotta stop feeding mayors the ground up brains of other mayors. It's no good.
It's the only way to give them their institutional knowledge. If you could think of a better way, November, I'd like to hear it.
Yeah. So
just this weird, like, disgusting dish that's famous in the First Ward called like meat slurry or something. You drink it out of a cup.
Yeah.
Getting mayoral wasting disease.
You know, it's because it's like, hey, here in the First Ward, we just dip a cup right in the slaughterhouse trench and then good.
Oh, damn.
It's a slaughterhouse pottage.
Just ending with a sudden turn to medical horror.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah, his biography makes it clear. This is not Mad Cow. This was something else.
Great.
Thank you.
It is.
Thank you so much. Anyway, that is the story of Jimmy Griffin.
What a piece of shit.
Yeah. What a motherfucker. I'm glad he died horribly.
A colossal piece of shit whose brain was a sponge for quite a while. We don't know for exactly how long.
You try and provide healthcare in the Rust Belt, and the mayor whose brain is being eaten has you assassinated.
Truly, you know, it's classic. Like, he really was a mayor out of time, kind of, in that, like, his mayor stylings were very like 1901 kind of, like, me and the boys are getting in there.
He should have been a James Michael Curley goon.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Like,
is Skanoots a nickname that a guy with Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease gives to his friend?
Well,
Maybe. I mean, Skanoots is also dead. Skanoots lived until 2022.
Wow. Jesus fucking Christ. Skanoots, like, the Irishman in
for
many ways.
So long. Yeah. Beloved husband of Paula.
21st century Skanoots.
I'm a 20th century Skanoots and I don't want to be here.
Skanoots saw 9/11 happen.
Skanoots was there.
Skanoots lived through COVID.
Yeah. And you know what? We honor him with a 21-gun Skanoot.
Yes, good.
Let's go.
I would unsubscribe from the Patreon for that.
Well, a lot of people here, if you heard this episode, you are subscribed to the Patreon.
No, you're not. Saying,
yes,
this
you
is post Glant.
Oh, yes,
Glant
you are.
Glant was the bonus.
Hey, you know what? If you listen to this episode, you're not subscribed to the Patreon, or maybe you are. But if you are,
you should subscribe to the Patreon. You can unsubscribe really fast, so long as you subscribe again, and that way we get billed for the month twice.
Yeah, totally. And by the way, if you subscribe now, you're gonna get you know what you're gonna get. You're gonna get a boatload of Glant.
You're gonna get a huge Glant right to the dome.
A guy from Pomplamoose who is in charge of Patreon, I am giving you a $1 trillion idea. I don't want an exit survey. I don't want to know why people are mad at me and stop listening. I want an entry survey. And I want that entry survey to say Skanoots.
Or Glant.
Write down Skanoots. Comment on this with Skanoots.
There are entry surveys to Patreon. People just generally don't fill them in.
Okay, well, if you are because of Skanoots,
fill that shit out with Skanoots.
If you have decided mm-hmm. to subscribe based on this episode,
nogodsdomares.com.
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 No, we have to be so clear about the name of the show.
Fandom.com.
Unidentified mayors at fandom.com.
Someone start the fan wiki also for the show. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we're actually on the like unidentified people fandom wiki.
We already have a TV trope, I'm afraid to say.
Do we?
God damn it.
Yeah. I don't like that.
Listen, here's the thing. Your only way of affecting my behavior, you have basically none. I don't read the Patreon comments because I don't remember the login, right? We don't have a subreddit, so I can't Google that or search it on Twitter to make myself feel bad. If you want me to act on your information, the only things to do are DMing me or entry survey, and both of those things should begin with the word Skanoots.
The official No Gods, No Mayors greeting. And Skanoots to you.
and also with you.
And also unto you. We did that with Glant last time. We love a funny name here on No Gods, No Mayors.
Skanoots.
Okay.
No, but you don't remember the password? Have you been tested for Creutzfeldt Jakobs?
The only way to test for that, and part of the reason why it's so terrifying, is for them to dissect your brain afterwards. You die of it.
Yeah.
So I hope not. But in the meantime, I'm making podcasts, you know?
Period.
According to TVTropes.org, there's a running gag on the show where November and Maddie try to convince Riley to transition. That's interesting.
I don't remember us doing that.
Yeah, I don't. November and or Riley badly misremember how the municipal news segment of the show is called.
Yeah, that's done.
Pretty good.
That's over. Yeah. Okay, all right, it's time.
Listen to me and Riley's new podcast.
Yeah, please. Ooh,
and that's on period that you should listen to our new podcast.
Yeah, Buzz.
And that's work. That's a work for me. Your Honor.
It's trouble in River City. It's me, it's Hessa, it's Charles, it's Dan, and we're having it's another good time show. We're having a good time making it.
Good.
So do check it out. Anyway, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you on the Patreon next week. Hessa, is there anything else you want to direct people towards other than Trouble in River City?
Yeah, listen to my other podcast, Seeking Derangements, and listen to Movie Mindset when it comes back on under the Chapo Trap House banner, under the umbrella, if you will, darling.
We will.
And I will. Yeah, listen to all that stuff. Visit Buffalo, go to Duff's, that's the best wing.
Okay.
It's not Anchor Bar. Go, yeah, visit Duff's. It's actually funny. A funny Buffalo thing right before. I know we're way over time. Mm-hmm. But it's very funny. There are like three people who claim they invented the wing. And it's like a debate which one did it first. But all three of them are in Buffalo. Just completely. It seems to be coincidentally. Which is a fun fact that I love. But yeah. Listen to Seeking Derangements, listen to Trouble in River City, and No Gods, No Mayors also.
.com.
Okay. Bye. .com. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.